Great. Well, again, welcome everybody. We're very excited. We have such a great group here today and all interested in what has happened, the transformation of Reno, Nevada. The economic transformation is amazing. So looking forward to hearing more about that. Just a couple housekeeping items. Restrooms are down this way. We've got the coffee and water and snacks, and we will be having lunch. This is going to be the first panel starting shortly. Then we'll have a second panel, and then we have breakouts. If you don't have an agenda, you can go to, if you've got the access online, you can go to the ATEA website. It's ateaonline.org, and you can actually use that as an agenda. There's a place to click that for the conference, and then you download the agenda and you can follow it on your phone or iPad. And am I missing anything, Sandra? Okay. Any questions? Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Jim, and he's going to go ahead with the panel.
Thank you, Marie. And if I may, I'll just set the stage a little bit before we begin the panel discussion. I'll be brief. We have 50 minutes for the panel discussion, and I've pre-prepared questions for the panel members. When I was talking to somebody the other day and they looked at the list of people I had on the panel, they said, well, you couldn't get the governor on the panel either, because this is the A-list. Not only in Northern Nevada, but across the state. And I would say that just about any one of these individuals could pick up the phone and call the governor, and when he saw the caller ID, he'd know who was calling him. So they are I'm very happy to be associated with these people. I'm happy that they're overachievers and agreed to be here when I know that a couple of them have other places they need to be simultaneously. So thank you for coming today. But back in 2005, when I came to my position as the Dean of the Technical Sciences here, we were right at the peak of the construction-fueled economic boom in Northern Nevada, but 2 years later, we found ourselves plunged into the Great Recession, and the region led the nation in unemployment rate. I didn't know you were going to be here, Bob, so you'll probably want to fact-check this number. Our unemployment rate was around 15% at the peak of the... Okay, statewide 13.9, and I think Reno exceeded that. I know Mike and Ann can confirm that. Long before the recession struck, however, several community leaders began pushing the college, and me in particular, to embrace manufacturing training to help diversify our economy. By 2014, the region had made progress, thanks in large part to Mike and the EDON team, attracting small and mid-sized manufacturers to the region. But then they landed the big fish, the Gigafactory. Talk about being in the right place at the right time. We did have that nascent manufacturing program. We had solid employees at the college, support from the TAC grants, which was extremely important, and forward-thinking state government willing to use some of its recession-constricted resources to help us launch new training, that the new training that was promised to Tesla and Panasonic at the Gigafactory. And I was just fortunate to be along for the ride, to be perfectly honest. Today's panel includes community leaders who played a critical role in helping attract the Gigafactory to the region, while others have been instrumental in helping the community rise to the challenge that we confronted. So I'll introduce our panel members for you, starting with Bob here. Corey Hunt from the Governor's Office of Economic Development and Abby Whitaker from the Abby Agency were unable to join us this morning, but we are fortunate that Bob Potts from GOED accepted a last-minute invitation to participate. Bob is the research director at GOED. His specialty is economic impact analysis, and it was his work that kept me up at night after we landed the Gigafactory, because he was projecting the employment needs and what we were going to need to do to get our population ready for the Gigafactory. And it was hair-raising for me because the numbers were just staggering. Next to Bob is Frank Woodbeck. And if you were to look up Nevada Workforce Development in the dictionary, you'll find Frank's picture. Frank's career in the Silver State began when he served on the Nevada Commission on Economic Development in Las Vegas. He was subsequently appointed by Governor Sandoval to the director's position at the Nevada Department of Employment Training and Rehabilitation, and later joined the Nevada System of Higher Education in multiple roles. That's where he guided system colleges, the Nevada system community colleges in particular, to multi-million dollar federal grants to help address the needs of employers at a time when the state resources were nearly non-existent. He currently serves as the Vice Chancellor of Workforce Development at ENSHE and is an outspoken supporter of technical education throughout the state. And when I talk about one of the community leaders who were pushing us here at TMCC to embrace manufacturing, I have to point to Ryan Costella. Ryan is the Director of Strategic Initiatives at ClickBond, one of the earliest and most innovative advanced manufacturing companies in Nevada. Products from ClickBond are shipped worldwide for the aerospace and defense industries. So I hear there's going to be some simpatico conversations going on here in a little while. Ryan has served for several years as the chair of the Manufacturing Industry Sector Council for the state of Nevada. He's also active on the national scene, participating in the Public Affairs Steering Committee for the National Association of Manufacturers. He's an unwavering supporter of industry-certified credentials that are portable and stackable. And Ryan drove an effort several years ago for TMCC and our sister institution in Carson City, Western Nevada College, to adopt the Dream It, Do It model. For those of you from Minnesota, I'm pretty sure you're Minnesota and Wisconsin should be familiar with Dream It, Do It. As a matter of fact, it led to a feature story on 60 Minutes in 2012, and it was Ryan's persistence that drove the colleges to embrace that. Next to Ryan is Ann Silver, a New York City native. Ann arrived in Northern Nevada 2 decades ago, and her career path includes several years as the executive director of JOIN, a WIOA-funded career training organization that serves 13 of Nevada's 19 counties. In this role, Ann recognized the disconnect and frequent duplication of services that existed in the region's workforce training programs, from federally funded programs like JOIN to public education, higher education, and even the employer's efforts. She organized the Workforce Consortium to bring participants in these agencies together to inventory employer needs, identify gaps, and coordinate efforts to address those needs. She's currently the CEO of the Reno Sparks Chamber of Commerce, representing 1,500 members who employ 75,000 people in the community. And at the end of the table is Mike Kazmierski, the CEO of the Economic Development Authority of Western Nevada, or EDON. Mike's a retired Army colonel and a graduate of West Point, and he took command of EDON in 2011 and transformed the agency into one of the highest performing in the country. Besides EDON's critical role in attracting the Gigafactory, his team has attracted more than 100 new companies, bringing more than 8,000 new jobs to the region just in the last 4 years, essentially the same period of time since the Gigafactory was announced. So he's more than his agency has helped more than double the new employment base in the community. Mike was also one of the first community leaders to sound the rallying cry to support community colleges as an important component of the economic development formula. He's also an active member of TMCC's Institutional Advisory Council, and we're grateful that he chose to skip the IAC meeting this morning to join us here. So thank you all for being here. So we'll get started with the questions. Hopefully we'll have a few minutes at the end of our presentations or answers to take audience questions as well. But I'll direct the first question to Mike. Mike, how do we as a community, and more importantly as a community college, manage the challenges of this economic transformation that we find ourselves in?
That's a question that could take four hours, and we have about 5 minutes. So you're going to get an overview here. And I think you will eventually become experts in this. First off, we have a team from Wisconsin. Let me see your hands. There you go. Probably interested, a little interested in Foxconn, right? If you had to trade Foxconn for a healthy Aaron Rodgers, would you do that? After the last 2 weeks, I think there's more hands that would go up than there would have been otherwise. Certainly the season looks sad. As a cheesehead myself, I can tell you I'm mourning with you, but we'll get through it. Three things that I'm going to touch on, and again, this could be hours and hours, but I'm going to hit three things that I think are really the most important to start with. And first one is attitude. When you talk about manufacturing or technology, there are so many facets in there. One is the attitude that a two-year degree is enough. We as a nation, and I can tell you our education institutions, higher education, everyone needs to be college ready, and they forget the career part. And we talk about getting four-year degrees, and if you look at everyone on our boards and regents, they all have multiple degrees and are all highly educated, and all their children are highly educated, so they think everyone's going to be highly educated. And the reality is, that's good for some people, but 80% in this state, 80% of the Nevada kids will not get four-year degrees. 80%. So we got to be careful talking about the four-year degrees as the solution, when the reality is most of this state, and my guess is most of Wisconsin and many other states, will have wonderful lives and wonderful jobs without four-year degrees. And that's where manufacturing comes in. Manufacturing in the 21st century is more technology than ever. For anyone who's been through a factory lately, there are some factories that don't even have lights on because it's so mechanized. There's robotics and computerization and coding and all these great jobs that are associated with manufacturing work now in the 21st century, because the old manufacturing of assembly line and thousands of people, now you may end up with thousands of people at some point, but you're doing a lot more sophisticated work. It's a lot more technical, and you've got a lot better wages associated with it, so your quality of life is much better. And oh, by the way, most people in the factory will not have four-year degrees. You're the ones that are going to prepare them for great jobs. Manufacturing, I like to stand up in front of teachers and tell them, manufacturing, the students you have in your classroom, and oh, by the way, not a child in most classrooms will raise their hand if you ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you ask them, how about manufacturing? Forget it. They went police and firefighters and president of the United States and the inventor of Google, who knows. But they don't want to be manufacturing, unless you happen to be in manufacturing and they see what you're doing and they appreciate it. Part of that's our education attitude. The attitude about manufacturing, the attitude about two-year degrees. We, and I think for your success, you have to help turn the needle with your legislators, with your community. You need to start embracing manufacturing so that when the state starts allocating resources towards target industries, and oh, by the way, when I got here 6 years ago, manufacturing was not a target industry. We didn't really see it as something we needed to focus on, even though I knew this was a huge opportunity for this region, and we made it our priority. We actually landed 40 manufacturing companies before Tesla even looked at us, because manufacturing is growing in the U.S. There's insourcing and all these other things, and they're great jobs. So part of that is attitude. It's now important to the state. We have great state buy-in at this point, but it's taken years to get there. So the attitude, I think, is really something I push very hard. The second thing I want to talk about is multiplier effect. Tesla is going to bring in 6,500 jobs in 5 to 10 years. So you do the math and go, okay, that's 6,500 jobs. That's really interesting. We can handle that. You know, we're a community of 400,000. What's the big deal? Until you start realizing it's not just the company, it's the multiplier effect. And that multiplier effect is huge. We've added, now part of that is because we've turned and focused on manufacturing for 3 years before Tesla came here. But we've added 45,000 jobs in the last 4 years. Tesla has added less than 3,000. So when you say, okay, let's worry about the 3,000 from Tesla, don't forget the other thousands and thousands of jobs that may not necessarily be associated with Tesla, but might want to be near Tesla, might want to get more, be more interested in your region because of Foxconn in this case. They may want to be a supplier and they have supply operations somewhere else, and they may want to supply Foxconn, but they have other clients, and they may set up a regional office. You're going to get that multiplier effect that's going to be intense. Let's just say intense, and your local businesses will not be very happy. Because when they're paying $25 an hour, or $22 an hour, or $18 an hour, for us, logistics and distribution was paying $11 an hour 6 years ago, and now they have to pay $18 an hour just to get someone to walk through the door, they're not real happy. Got to help them understand this is good for the community for wages to go up. But with wages, a lot of other things go up. And with this multiplier effect, a lot of other things happen. You have, if you aren't building houses and apartments now, you're already behind. We are so far behind in our housing because of this growth, it's starting to affect our ability to attract companies. It's hard, though, to get a developer to come in and build an apartment complex before people show up. But, it takes them 2 to 3 years to do that. When you start doing the permits, you start doing the construction costs go up, everything else. So you're already behind when it comes to housing, unless you've got just a bunch of, you know, vacant buildings right now. Most people don't have that. So housing is really, should be somehow at the top of your list. It's the area we were weakest in, we continue to be weak in, but we're working on it. So the multiplier effect is huge. I can tell you that you will underestimate it. It will affect you in many ways. Many of your people that you count on will find opportunities to go somewhere else. So you're gonna have huge turnover internal to your organizations. It's a ripple effect that affects everyone. It's a good thing, but most people or many people are struggle with change, so that's always the issue. And then the last thing is workforce. I mean, obviously you're in the workforce world. Attracting workforce is just as important as developing workforce. You only have so much workforce. We had 14% unemployment, we're now at 4% or less. We have developed all, you know, we basically used all our supply of existing workers, and now we've got to bring in more and develop the workforce we have. And as you develop the workforce you have, you take someone, say, from retail, and you upgrade their skills, and now they're going from $11 an hour to $25 an hour. That's really good, except now, if you're retail, who are you hiring? Good luck finding someone to fill that position. So you're causing a lot of other issues, but the development part is important. That's where you get a key part of it, and that attraction piece. And attraction is more than just, hey, we got a job. Because if you've dealt with millennials lately, and there are a few here, you know they're looking for the package. Okay, where am I going skiing? Well, we fortunately have a big mountain here. You have little ones in Wisconsin. Where are we gonna have fun? What's your downtown look like? What about this? What about that? You've gotta think about the whole community as well if you're gonna attract talent to your region. So those are really three big things. I can tell you when I met Jim 6 years ago now, he was in the other building, and early on I did a walkthrough of this facility, and I don't think there was a piece of equipment in here that wasn't 30 years old.
Yeah, that's right.
We took rejects out of the shop programs in the high schools, because the high schools got rid of their shop programs because there's no need for manufacturing and all that. And basically they were stacked around here, and I came in the gym, I said, this is a problem. We're bringing manufacturers to this region, and this is the best we have. And he said, it's what we have. And so the good news is the community college system, with a lot of help, we got grant money, we got partnerships from companies, they donated some of their equipment, and the community college took it seriously and ramped up to a point where we have a first-class program now churning out talent that's filling great jobs, that's changing the community. So those are just a couple of things. I could go on and on, but we'll leave it at that.
Okay, thank you, Mike. And Mike did touch on the question that I have for you. The sudden arrival of a larger-than-life employer like the Gigafactory has an impact on local employers, as Mike mentioned. Based on your experience with your members of the chamber, what advice can you give us as educators to help mitigate that impact?
Thanks, Jim. Just a few facts about the Reno-Sparks Chamber of Commerce, which exists as the largest business organization in Northern Nevada. With its 1,500 members, 75% of those are small businesses, 50 employees or less, and 50% of those are 25 employees or less. So as much as I respect and work closely with Mike Kaczmarski, I'm here to encourage all of you not to neglect your chambers of commerce as you talk about STEM and manufacturing and bringing workforce development and training into your communities. Many of our small employers are having great difficulty recruiting individuals who may not require the level of training that you may be involved in. They're looking for someone with a work ethic, someone who will show up on time, and someone they can train on the job. Which is not to say that based on my past, I'm not incredibly focused on job training. I serve on the governor's workforce development board, and it's interesting to be part of the conversations about the number of people we need, what we need in construction and manufacturing, and the wide array of talent that is needed and that we see being imported from other locations. But I'm very focused on the fact that our small employers are without. as they lose people to the Gigafactory and other large locations that have the full complement of benefits, including perhaps the 401k and health insurance, and you can bring your dog to work or whatever it may be. I'm dealing with small employers who say, I can't find one person. I have to pay a higher wage to compete with the large manufacturing and other large employers that have come to the community, and I can't find one person to answer the phone, to sit at a desk, or to greet people. So there is a collateral effect as we go through this incredible resurgence in our economy and tremendous growth, which is that we can't forget the support businesses that all of us utilize. Everyone working at locations like Panasonic and Tesla need to get their hair cut, nails get done, their shoes are repaired, they have clothes to drop off at the dry cleaner, and those are the individual companies that are most affected by the resurgence in economic development. They lose one person, they lose their opportunity to thrive as a small business. And so as the Chamber of Commerce, I'm dancing on the head of a pin, welcoming the incredible economic boon that we are experiencing with a great debt to Mike Kaczmarski and all my colleagues here, and also trying to balance the needs of small employers who say, how do I attract somebody to serve a deli sandwich or learn to operate the dry cleaning rotator machine, and also our community, and much like many of yours, that is experiencing a wonderful economic boom and benefiting people with money. Houses, housing prices are going up. People are experiencing a much better world in which to live. And yet, on the other hand, there are many people who say, what happened to our unique quality of life? There are now five cars backed up at a stop sign. And you know, how come the roads are crowded? So don't forget infrastructure, which ironically should precede growth, but in our case, did not. Mike and others worked very hard to talk about roads and housing and schools and everything we need to support this massive growth. I think if we had it to do all over again when we were in the midst of our recession, we would probably say, let's build the roads and tunnels and bridges and get our bus system and public transportation up to speed, because that will come back to bite you as you encourage people to move into your communities, you encourage people to take these wonderful jobs that are being developed. You'll find many people, small businesses and residents, who say, wait a second, what happened to the small town I'm living in? What happened to the quality of life that I moved here for, or stayed here for? So the Chamber of Commerce, which represents small, medium, and large businesses like Panasonic and Amazon and Switch, have yet to get Tesla, but I think Mike's helping me with that. We know that we are balancing, we're in a balancing act of preserving a lifestyle and a unique way of operating in Nevada, where you can be a big fish in a little pond, and on the other hand, saying we have a thriving economy, it's booming, we're welcoming people. Mike often reminds many of us, you know, we need about 50,000 employees with a projected population of about 700,000, I believe, in 2024. And I go home every night and say to my husband, where can we move to? You know, I'm from New York City and moved here for certain reasons, and it's not the Reno I moved to, but I love it. We're seeing, as I mentioned, people thrive and succeed and have incomes they heretofore didn't imagine. But we're also dealing with the collateral of that. And I encourage you all to look at that balance that you need to achieve as you look to growth and growth in the colleges and technical programs and manufacturing concerns that come to town. Take a look at all the variables that are involved.
Thank you, Ann. And for Ryan, who has been one of our earliest champions of technical education, based on your experience, how must the role of technical education change to meet the needs of this evolving workplace?
That's kind of like my colleague said, we could be here all day talking about that. So thank you for the invitation to be here, and it's great to be up here and see some of these faces. I haven't seen you all in a while, so it's nice to be up here. I think first and foremost, when I get asked that specific question, I think it's important to remember that you have to get the right folks in the room together. And it doesn't have to be a major undertaking, you know, with bells and whistles, but you got to get, you know, your employers, at least those who have the ability to look beyond making payroll on Friday and can actually look up and say, hey, we can make some investments, we can think bigger. Even if it's just one or two of them, getting them at the table, getting the educators at the table, both K-12 and higher ed, your workforce development leadership, your economic development leadership, your chambers, folks who represent employers, you have to have them all having the same conversation. It's really common for each of those groups to go barreling down a freeway, and the rest of them, you know, aren't even aware that there's a road. And you will find roadblocks if everyone's not walking and talking the same language. As it comes to technical education, you know, we employ a lot of technical people. I will tell you, we're about 460 people right now, ClickBond. We design and manufacture specialty hardware and systems for primarily used in aerospace and defense platforms around the world. And the bulk of our hiring, which is consistent with the statistics of our state and probably from what I've seen national data, the bulk of the hiring is going to require what we call technician level people. And technician level people are not entry level folks, they're just beyond that. They're folks who are trainable, but they've got some sort of technical capability, whether that's welding or machine operation or quality control specialties or supply chain capabilities. That's where the growth and the hiring is going to happen. And it's going to be magnified by the exit of the baby boomers going into retirement and moving in new directions. So that's important to remember. We also have a lot of entry-level hires. And so those are folks who don't necessarily require a lot of experience, to Ann's point. But I can tell you with 100% certainty, we need those folks to be trainable. We do not want to hire someone who's going to come in as an initial assembler of product and not be able to develop that person over the course of his or her career. And so I can't develop somebody if they don't have the foundational skills of reading, math, and problem solving. And I would challenge anyone who employs anybody, whether it's hairdressing or casinos or you know, entry level in a manufacturing operation, you need people who can read, do math, and problem solve. And so a lot of our work in this state has been around, frankly, just trying to get the K-12 system and you know, employers and others to really rally around getting people across that baseline. If you can be trainable, then we can work with you. If you can't be trainable, if you can't read, if you can't do math, if you can't problem solve, there's not much we can do. I'm not a school. I can teach you how to do new processes. I can teach you how to use new technology. I can't teach you how to do the fundamentals. So in your efforts, I would really recommend make sure that you're paying attention to that foundational level and that there are mechanisms in place to make sure the folks coming out of the system, wherever they come out of, whether it's the K-12 system, the higher ed system, the workforce development system, that they're crossing that minimum threshold of foundational skills. In this state, we've really rallied around a tool called the National Career Readiness Certificate, which ACT administers. They're the folks who also do the college entrance exam. At ClickBond, you cannot come work for us unless you have a minimum of a bronze, in most cases a silver level. You cannot come work for us if you don't have that. We don't use a high school diploma. We don't use college degrees necessarily. It's a National Career Readiness Certificate, and then certifications stacked on top of that. The other piece is speaking a common language. So once you get everyone around the same table and you're having a similar conversation, you'll find probably that employers and educators in particular do not speak the same language. Folks in my seat will be pounding on the table that I can't find people. What the heck am I paying tax dollars for? Yelling at the educators who are saying, well, you won't tell me what you want, and we're doing our very best, and it's this ping pong match that's really interesting to pay attention to. What I can tell you is here in Nevada many years ago, even maybe before Mike arrived, we began a conversation with Frank and the governor and the state to really say, where's the common language that we can all start speaking? And that's certifications and credentials. And so one of the reasons I think you've seen so much progress in Nevada is folks like Jim New and his counterparts at Western Nevada College, College of Southern Nevada, Great Basin College, and the university system here. Everyone's really come to the table to understand that credentials are important. Then there's the question of, well, there's so many certifications and so many credentials, and all these different agencies will tell you they have the magic thing for your needs. There's a lot of rigor that needs to go into evaluating which certifications and credentials are valid. And so you'll see here, and I encourage you to ask Jim about it, you'll see the Manufacturing Skills Standards Council certifications being promoted, the National Institute of Metalworking Skills Standards being promoted for machining work, American Welding Society for welding. We have an APICS chapter and apparatus in the state for supply chain and logistics. Those credentials really cross the threshold of being extremely valuable. They're all nationally portable, which is hugely important. They're driven by longitudinal data to be effective, and they're third-party validated. And so it's really important that as you look at setting up your technical education programs, that you're not just saying, oh, the person took a class or two. As nice as that might be for a particular employer, it's not super valuable for the student, and it's not valuable for other employers. You need to give people something that they can carry with them from job to job, career to career, and climb in a path. Frank talks a lot about how it's really it's not a college or career concept. It's a free way of life, and there are lots of on and off ramps. And the goal is to get people across a threshold where they're trainable. At ClickBond, when we bring someone on, even at the entry level with the National Career Readiness Certificate, we fully expect that we're going to be paying for them, in addition to their job, to go to school. We will be paying for them to get a college degree or pursue an apprenticeship. But we don't hire people based on whether or not they went to college or not. It's one ecosystem, and we really need to stop talking about this college or career thing. It's completely bizarre from an employer standpoint. And all of you can help lead those conversations back in your home state. So that's my first impressions in response to that question. So.
All right, thank you. And you're making my job easy. One of the things I was thinking about was how am I going to segue from one person to the next for their particular topic. Ryan touched on the linkage between public education and higher education, and Mike also mentioned the fact that when TMCC was trying to start up a manufacturing program, primarily machining, the local school district was shutting theirs down, which was a blessing and a curse. The curse was we lost our feeder, but the blessing was we didn't have money for equipment and they were willing to give us theirs. So it did start our program, it did create the foundation. But Frank, can you describe some of the successful efforts in Nevada for higher education to collaborate with public education to build pathways into these technical programs?
I'll go through a few points. And Ryan actually gave me a great segue in talking about the highway. If you can picture a highway with on and off ramps, basically what we're trying to do and what we are doing is building a system where, a lifelong learning system, in other words, where someone can start on that highway toward a career. The other end of that highway might be an engineering degree, but they may never make it to an engineering degree. However, we want to make sure the linkages are there between K through 12 and the university system, so that someone can get on that highway and go as far as they might want to go in their career. But there is an entry point to every highway, as you know. That on-ramp could be a 12-week certificate program, a stackable certificate program. And they start their career. They get off that highway again to build their career. And that's after they've started their work life, and they continue on that. What we've done here, and we hope to continue to build on, we've had an incredible collaboration across state agencies, from the Nevada Department of Education to the system of higher education through our colleges and our universities, with the Office of Workforce Innovation, the Governor's Office of Economic Development, and you'll hear from in a minute, and the Department of Employment Training and Rehabilitation. We are working together in what is called a New Skills for Youth initiative, in which we are building those particular highways, as I'm talking about, which include stackable credentials, in the four major umbrella sectors that are the targets of economic development, one being advanced manufacturing, another being healthcare, a third being education and training, and a fourth being IT, or technologies in general. Obviously, under those four umbrellas, there are a number of different industries and a number of different specialties. But the idea is the same, that we want to build those highways that anyone can take advantage of throughout their lifetime. Secondly, the other point I want to make quickly, as we came through the recession, even though we have a 4% unemployment rate right now, I was back when it was 13.9 was when I was director of employment. So, but what ended up happening is that there are a number of industries that are, a number of industries, I shouldn't say that, the hospitality and gaming industry basically was and still is the largest employer, but during that recession, they right-sized themselves. So that put a number of people out of work. They were able to get jobs, but many, many folks in Nevada are underemployed. And those underemployed individuals need to have an opportunity for a career. This gives them that opportunity for the career to change from a $10 or $11 an hour job to a $17, $18, $28 an hour job by getting into advanced manufacturing at this particular point for that example. So if you go back to picturing that highway, someone might start in K-12, but we're never going to fill all these jobs with kids we have coming out of high school and community colleges and the university system. It's just not going to happen. We need to give opportunities to folks who are 25 years of age, 35 years of age and older, opportunities to change careers in a state that has opportunity that they can take advantage of. So the colleges, particularly the community colleges, have embraced that notion. The stackable credentials are a part of that, or basically the foundation of it. And then in combination with industry, we are designing programs that serve industries for at least entry-level opportunities and beyond. And then once we get them into entry-level opportunities, then from there on, they can advance themselves in skills as they work. So that's really the key to what we're doing at this particular point.
Thanks, Frank.
I know it's going to Bob Potts. So.
We'll turn it over to Bob, who's a real numbers man. And he can do things with numbers that just amaze me. And Bob, I had a prepared question for you, but I think you came with some numbers today that illustrate what the impact has been of our work toward addressing the needs of employers and attracting the new industry and diversifying our economy. So I think I'm just going to toss a softball to you and let you talk about what you want to talk about, because I was impressed.
Well, that could get dangerous, right? I've been involved in economics and economic research, especially in the applied world. I mean, I worked at UNLV in the academic setting for 20 years. But it's the one thing about the state of Nevada is it has business cycles like every economy has, right? But the amplitude on Nevada's business cycle are extreme compared to everybody else, right? We have higher highs and lower lows. So Jim mentioned earlier the unemployment rate, right? And I said 13.9%. He's right. Up here, it approached 15%. We lost roughly 36,000 jobs up in this region up here, and we've gained back 38,000, so we're well above our pre-recession high, about 2,000 jobs above our pre-recession high. Right now, the unemployment rate is 4.3% here, and so we have essentially full employment, right? And so what do you do with this full employment? How do you get folks back to work? We have all this demand for workforce, and there's no available workforce. Part of that comes back to what Frank was mentioning here a bit ago, is how do you upscale folks? How do you build up their ability and their opportunities and really start fitting what the overall economic development plan is to diversify the economy so that it's much more resilient, so that you don't have these high highs and these low lows and all this amplitude as you... I mean, it goes back to what the governor's original plan was when he came back into office in 2010, is to help really develop a sustainable and resilient economy, okay? And it's been great working with all these folks on this panel and people across the state. One of the things that Nevada has the ability to do, because we are a small state, is to be very responsive, and we tend to work together pretty well. There's ping pong matches that go on, like Ryan mentioned, but quite frankly, those are healthy, right? That makes sure that you do the right things, okay, not the easy things, okay? But what Jim was referring to, so my boss asked me here recently, he said, I'd like you to go back and look at the last 6 years at the real success stories from a numbers perspective. And as I go through that, you know, I said, you know, we're at a higher employment rate than we were at our pre-recession high. Unemployment rate is full. I mean, those are really great stories. We're the fastest private sector job growth state in the United States right now. Those are real success stories. But I think the underlying success story that gets missed is what we're seeing in the aggregate change in the job mix, right? So Frank was right, tourism, gaming, and entertainment has always been our biggest sector. And it's been great, and we want to make sure we take care of that traditional, that foundational industry. But at the same token, when have all your eggs in one basket, that creates problems when there's national and international economic downturns. You need to diversify your portfolio. And it's really starting to show up in the aggregate numbers right now. And it's showing up in industries like manufacturing, logistics, IT, clean energy, aerospace and defense, healthcare. And every one of those, if I take and I take out all the national noise and just see what has Nevada's competitive effect been over the last 6 years, it's been pretty amazing. And it's been different between the North and the South, as well as the state as a whole. But overall, there's been some really great stories that are showing up in the aggregate numbers. And it's not only in what Mike would call primary jobs and what we really focus on, those kind of jobs where wealth comes into the region that grows the economy and, you know, our gross regional product in the different ways we measure economic capacity. But it's showing up in payroll, all right? Virtually all these industries that we're seeing this big competitive effect in, that we're seeing this growth in, is paid twice as much as what the tourism and entertainment industry pays. So not only are you getting money coming in from outside the region, but you're getting this extra kick from this extra payroll that these companies are being paid, okay? But as Ann mentioned, you know, we have all these issues of the challenges that go along with growth, and how do you stay in front of that? And Jim and I were talking a little bit earlier. How do you bridge between what was and what is when there's bureaucracies and whatever during this bridge period of where the funding becomes really, really important? And we were talking a bit, The Big Short, you guys seen the movie The Big Short, where there were a few guys that actually seen what was going to come on with the mortgage crisis. Right now, Nevada needs to take risks, and I think a lot of states need to take risks on what we know is coming. What Ryan's mentioned, we're living in a completely different economic paradigm with all the technology, emerging industry trends, and we need to think about how are we going to really stay ahead of the curve on that and take some risks that a lot of folks aren't comfortable with. How do you draw outside the traditional structure of a four-year education and start talking about things like what Ryan needs in his shop and what other advanced manufacturers or IT or data centers, and think about, and it stretches all the limits that you have. Most of the time it gets to funding, facilities, things like that. But if you don't do that, you're either running in the lead or you're running with the pack. So that's kind of where it is. And quite frankly, I think it's largely goes back to the leadership of the governor and having this vision and willing to take those kind of risks. The people that jumped on board with him, from education to local government to industry across the board, that is now playing itself out in the real numbers that we're currently seeing. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. We have run well over schedule, and I know that this conversation could go on for hours here today, and I'm sorry that we cannot accommodate that. But I would like to ask you to join me in giving our panelists a round of applause. And I will thank them myself. Thank you. Welcome again to Reno, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your stay here with us and enjoy the Gigafactory tour later today. Thank you.